It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Lincoln Agency. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside La Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Now here's your host, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7 as Jared fumbles with his... He unplugged his headphones. We'll get to him here in a second. welcome in. Jared, a couple of sponsors, then we'll get to Jeff Ketchum on the collegesteel.com hotline to talk about the breaking news of the day, Manny Diaz, the new hire for Louisiana Tech at defensive coordinator.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 6 is brought to you by Lincoln Agency, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, Dowling Smokehouse, Chevyland in Shreveport, and Maxwell's Market in Shreveport.
You got to love live radio. Things were going flawlessly before you went to grab your headphones.
As soon as it goes live, the headphones come unplugged and everything is undone.
Let's go to Jeff Ketchum, publisher of orangebloods.com and a host of a radio show on Yahoo Sports Radio Daily. Jeff, how's it going?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Doing wonderful. Of course, the news broke this afternoon that former Texas defensive coordinator Manny Diaz was hired at Louisiana Tech as the defensive coordinator. What are your thoughts initially on that, Jeff?
Well, I'm glad that Manny is getting another opportunity to kind of rebuild his name a little bit. It didn't end well, obviously, in Austin, and anytime you're dismissed two games into a season, it smears the reputation a little bit. So, you know, Manny Diaz is a good dude. I think he's a guy that probably received the Texas job before he was ready, and I think that this is a good spot for him to go back and, like I said, start to rebuild what was, up until 12 months ago, or even less, a very promising career. So, I was pleased for Manny that the opportunity presented itself.
Jeff, whenever you talk about his as a strengths as a coach, where would you go immediately whenever you think about his strengths?
Well, I think that's a question that remains to be determined. You know, I mean, I don't know that his linebackers played really well. I don't know that he, as a teacher of football, I don't know who Manny Diaz is yet. I know, I think I have an idea of what it takes to make his system work, and it takes, I think, some older linebackers who have seen things before. You know, he did a really good job. His defense was pretty good in 2011, and at the time, he had two linebackers in Emmanuel Acho and Keenan Robinson, guys that, although they haven't really done anything in the NFL, they were all conference type linebackers and guys that at least had chances in the NFL before injuries have kind of robbed them of that opportunity. And the defense played pretty well. He is an aggressive play caller. He does a lot of exotics. You'll see a lot of tackles for loss. You'll see a lot of sacks. The fear with Manny Diaz, and it was essentially from the day he came in, is that he's so aggressive on defense that he sometimes, his defense is susceptible to the big play. And it didn't really happen in 2011 because they had some older veteran pieces that I think were able to execute what it was that was asked of them. When the older guys, the senior linebackers, departed after the 2011 season and they had to bring in some new guys, the soundness of the defense just wasn't present any longer. And they gave him another opportunity, Mac Brown did last season, and it just got away from him fast. The BYU game was an absolute train wreck. There needed to be a change right away. And I think there was a loss of faith in his ability to kind of just coach a good, sound defense. And if they've got to be basic, they've got to be basic. What Manny Diaz hasn't done a lot of at this point in his career is get by with sound football fundamentals and a base defense. Again, there's a lot of whistles and bells with what he does, and I think it remains to be seen whether or not that will work with him long term.
And then, of course, before he was hired at Texas, and really after his first year at Texas, he was one of the hot names, and really a lot of people thought that, hey, maybe Manny Diaz may be the next coordinator from Texas to be the next head coach. And then all
of a sudden, and honestly, you know, Manny Diaz was a little bit of a rock star after year one because, like I said, the defense played pretty well, and that was not where their area of need was. Ironically, it was the offense that when they hired Brian Harsin and Manny Diaz, both guys were question marks in some level because Diaz had 1 year of major BCS college football experience at Mississippi State, and Brian Harsin had neither. He only had success at Boise. After year one, the thought was that Manny Diaz was the guy that stood out more so than Brian Harsin. After year two, it flipped. I don't know that either guy had their stock soaring, but obviously Brian Harsin was able to step into a head coaching job and have been able to kind of use a set of circumstances to get back home and be in a happy place. That's what this move is for Manny Diaz on some level. If he can have some experience, some success at Louisiana Tech, I think it gives him a platform to kind of rebuild his image. And I think it's an image that's in sorely need of a rebuild.
And then whatever you look at him as a person, just talk about him as a person, Jeff.
That's what made this whole thing so difficult, because Manny Diaz is a really good dude. And to Manny Diaz's credit, look, I've seen a lot of train wrecks in the last 3 or 4 years covering Longhorn football in Austin, and it seems like everybody stabs everybody in the back. I think Mac Brown stabbed Will Muschamp in the back. I think Brian Harsin got a few daggers when he was out the door. I think this is a dirty business, and I will say this for Manny Diaz. He got fired and dismissed under some pretty difficult circumstances. Mac Brown essentially pointed the finger at Manny Diaz and said, "You're to blame," when the truth of the matter is that Mac Brown was to blame. And there was a culture issue that I think contributed to the problems that they had on the defensive side of the ball. Manny Diaz never said a bad word about anybody. He got fired. He got dismissed. In the next month, 2 months, 3 months, I didn't hear one thing come from anybody ever associated with Manny Diaz that ever pointed the finger at anybody. I mean, he's a good dude. He's a guy that the people in Austin that had a chance to get to know him even a little bit will be wishing for him to have a lot of success, because you want good things to happen to good people. And while I don't know how good of a football coach he is yet, I think he's without question has high character as a human being. And I root for him to have as much success moving forward as anybody I've covered. I think he's a good dude.
So, Jeff, are you under the belief that Diaz was Mac Brown's first sacrificial lamb, so to speak?
No. Greg Davis and the coaches that he fired after the 2010 season were the first official sacrificial lambs when they went 5-7, and then they brought Manny Diaz in to replace. They had basically cleaned house. And when they cleaned house, this was Mac Brown's redo, and he failed on his redo, which is why essentially he was forced out. And the thing about what Mac did, he panicked. I don't know. Ultimately, look, Greg Robinson's a better defensive coordinator than Manny Diaz. So when they got rid of Manny Diaz and brought Greg Robinson in, they brought in a guy that's coached in Super Bowls and a guy that they had had success with. But here's the funny thing. Every time Greg Robinson goes anywhere other than the University of Texas, he had never had success. He failed at Syracuse, failed at Michigan. When he came back, a lot of people thought, man, this guy hasn't had success in 10 years, and he had a pretty good year. I hope for Manny Diaz's sake that it was just a Texas thing, that this place was a festering cesspool of negativity and bad juju. The culture change is absolutely needed. And again, that's not Manny Diaz's fault. It's not Manny Diaz's fault that he didn't have better players. It's not Manny Diaz's fault that I think some of his assistant coaches around him failed at their jobs. It's not his fault that when Will Muschamp was in Austin, he didn't do a very good job of recruiting and having the position in a better shape when Diaz took over. They had Emmanuel Acho, and they had Keenan Robinson. And when those two guys left, the cupboard was full of inexperienced guys and some questionable takes from over the years in recruiting.
So with Robinson's success this year, late in the year, would you say that some of that's some of Diaz's recruiting?
Can't blame that on Diaz.
With his successes, you wouldn't even. I wouldn't blame to me. It seems that you're saying that he didn't do a good
their
job.
Their linebackers were so bad year long that when we talk about the success that Greg Robinson had, you got to keep it in perfect perspective, which is it was much better than the night when it all went bad for Manny Diaz against BYU. They got better from that moment on. But anytime they played an offense this year that had any kind of a pulse, Texas had it put to them pretty good this year. So it was just a team that wasn't very good, that was just kind of an average lot. And, again, Manny Diaz, I'm not going to tell you that he didn't deserve to get fired. Mack Brown, if he had questions about Manny Diaz, should have replaced him after the 2012 season. Instead, Mack Brown would say, oh, I was trying to protect the guy's career and I didn't want – no, you weren't. You made the comfortable decision. Manny Diaz would have been fine if you had replaced him after 2012 season. He'd have gotten a job somewhere else. He probably would have been in a BCS conference. Mack Brown panicked because he knew that when they lost to BYU, Mack Brown came into the season talking about we're going to win all of the games. And they were favored by Vegas in the preseason to win every single game. That they ended up not coming close to that. And other than beating Oklahoma, there was nothing to hang their hat on this season against quality competition. It was just a mess. And it was a tsunami of stuff going on in this town with this program, and Manny Diaz just got caught up in it. Now, some of it was created by Manny, and again, I can't tell you guys today exactly what it is that Louisiana Tech got as far as a football coach is concerned. I can't tell you that they're going to be better. I can't tell you they're going to be worse. This situation was so unique, and it spiraled out of control so quickly that it's possible that Manny Diaz should be in broadcasting. It's also possible that he's going to be a head coach one day, and we'll look back on his tenure in Austin and say, it was all Mack Brown, and it was all about a program that was trying to keep themselves from drowning.
Well, Jeff, we really appreciate you joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio this evening, and look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Know this with Manny Diaz. He is going to have a lot of whistles and bells. I would say that if Manny Diaz takes – my final words on Manny would be, if Manny's going to progress, Manny's got to understand that there's got to be times to pull back the reins. And that never happened in Austin. His answer to everything was blitz, 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 more pressure. So they always had a lot of tackles for loss. But when your guys are out of position and you're doing that type of stuff and someone goes 60 on you in the blink of an eye, it changes the way you view that defense. That's the question that he has to answer. Can he coach a sound defense that has the principles that I think he believes in without compromising the overall scheme to begin with?
Jeff, really appreciate it. A man with a Wikipedia page. That's more than I could say.
It's completely incorrect. Everything on that Wikipedia page is wrong, which is a perfect example of why you should never use Wikipedia as a source.
Thanks,
and I
good,
do it
Jeff.
All the time. Hey, fellas, y'all be good, man.
Thanks, Jeff. You can catch Jeff Ketchum on Yahoo Sports Radio Daily. I believe his show ends at 3. We'll look up when exactly his show is. Entertaining guy, has done marvelous things on the internet with orangebloods.com, has built an empire, for lack of a better term. Chip Brown, one of his employees, has seen time on SportsCenter on numerous occasions.
SVP and Rosillo. That's the show I would love to be on.
Well, he's been on it probably more than once.
Probably so, especially with the Charlie Strong, Mack Brown, and all that stuff this season.
And he did a good job with the Big 12 missile crisis, for lack of a better term. So orangebloods.com is a good source for Texas athletics, and the number of subscribers they have on their website is proof. The proof's in the pudding. Let's take a break. Other side of the break, we will have
Robbie Falk.
Robbie Falk from BulldogBlitz.com. He was around the Mississippi State program whenever Manny Diaz was defensive coordinator there for that season at Mississippi State. So we'll get a Mississippi State perspective. We just had a Texas perspective. I was going to have a Middle Tennessee perspective. We will have a written story with that person in the coming days, so stay tuned for that. And then after Mr. Falk, we will give you our thoughts on Manny Diaz. In one word, I think it's an awesome hire.
I would say, if I was to do it in one word, I would say huge. Huge.
We have to keep things in perspective, just like Ketchum said, keep things in perspective with Robinson. You have to keep things in perspective for Louisiana Tech, and we will do that in a couple of segments. We'll be right. We'll be right back.
We'll be back right.
My brain was way ahead of me there. Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
You gotta love it. Tech sports, that is. That's why there's Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, Jonathan Ford, publisher of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Man, I'm just not having a good day. Publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. My mind's been going a million miles an hour since this afternoon, chasing this story. So I'll blame it on that. Jared, a couple of sponsors, then we'll get to Robbie Falk from BulldogBlitz.com on the line.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 6 is brought to you by Lincoln Agency, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, Dowling Smokehouse, Chevy Land in Shreveport, and Maxwell's Market in Shreveport. Robbie Falk joins us on the collegedeal.com hotline, and you can too at 888-993-7762.
Robbie, how's it going, my friend?
I'm doing great, guys. Just hanging out here in Mississippi. This awesome Mississippi weather we have up here is 28 degrees. Snow's on the way. It's excellent.
It was 70 yesterday, I imagine.
Yes, it was. And that's to be expected up here, man. It's all over the place. Tornadoes one day and ice the next.
We can relate in North Louisiana, believe you me. Robbie, you were around the Mississippi State program whenever Manny Diaz was in Starkville. Just talk about Manny as overall as a coach and as a person, and just from an overall perspective.
Absolutely. You know, I was a student in media relations back then in 2010. Really special season for Mississippi State. Everything just kind of lined up for them, to tell you the truth. I mean, it was kind of just a great relationship that Manny Diaz and Dan Mullen had that kind of led to big things. And, you know, add in some really, really good JUCO players that he was able to get a lot out of, and that scheme just really seemed to work for Mississippi State's defense, and a lot of things happened for Mississippi State during that time. They made a lot of noise. In fact, they won 6 straight games at one point, and that was really the breakthrough season for Dan Mullen and really a breakthrough season for Manny Diaz, and that led to him really kind of being a hot commodity among coaching circles. And he lasted that year at Mississippi State and went on to Texas. And, you know, he's a guy that's got a fiery personality on and off the field, very personable guy. He's a guy that's going to get a lot out of those kids. And, you know, for me, I felt like that Texas situation wasn't the best deal for him. The players and the scheme, everything that was going on there, I think he got a bad rap, and I think that really he just didn't fit into the equation there. Regardless of that, he's a great defensive coordinator, and I think he's really going to do well at Louisiana Tech.
What would you say his strength defensively? Of course, everybody talks about his aggressive play calling and blitzing a lot and that kind of thing. Does he get to the level, get on the same level with his players and get the most out of him? What is his strength?
Yeah, I think at Mississippi State, that was his forte. He got the most out of his players. He got a lot of aggression out of those players and really got after the football. That's one thing that he wants to do, and it's eerily similar to what Mississippi State wants to do now with Jeff Collins. They want to get after the football. They want 6, 7, 8 guys getting after the football. They're not going to play soft coverage. They're going to be aggressive. And I think, you know, maybe it was a culmination of just the players that he had at Texas and their attitudes, or, you know, I don't know. He had some skilled guys there for whatever reason, just wasn't able to work. And as you saw, it didn't really work after he left either. But he's going to get the most out of those players, and you're going to see an aggressive style of defense. You're going to see the defensive ends really coming off the edge. His linebackers are going to be athletic guys that can step back in coverage if they need to, but they're going to get after the quarterback. And, you know, he put 2 guys in the NFL as a linebacker, with K.J. Wright, who's about to be playing in the Super Bowl, and also Chris White, who plays for the New England Patriots. And both of those guys had incredible college careers in Mississippi State, really unheralded guys, but he got a lot out of those kids. And, you know, that's what you're going to see. Got the same thing out of Pernell McPhee, a defensive end now and playing some linebacker too with Baltimore. So he's gonna send those guys after the quarterback, and they're gonna be aggressive, they're gonna get off the ball, and they're gonna make those offensive linemen work. And I think, especially being there at Louisiana Tech, I think he's gonna be able to really get 100% out of those guys, and that will be, in my opinion, that will be one of the top defenses in the conference.
When you talk about the junior college players that he signed that really sparked his defense in 2010, were they linebackers or what positions did they play on defense?
Yeah, well, Chris White was a defensive end coming out of Itawamba Community College. It was his second year on campus there, and same thing with Chris White, who's a linebacker. He, you know, Pernell McPhee's actually been lining up as a linebacker, but he's a defensive end. He's a big guy, but that's a guy that had a tremendous motor, and having Diaz kind of push him and take him to the next level was what sent him to the NFL and made him a starting linebacker, starting defensive end. But he's got guys out there. He's going to get guys out there that can move all across the field. He's going to have those athletic linebackers coming off the edge. Chris White wasn't the most athletic guy on the field, but he had a knack for the ball. And a lot of that was the positions that Diaz was putting him in. He's going to have a lot of good stunts out of those linebackers. He's going to show a lot of disguises from the blitz. You're not really going to know what's coming. And, you know, that is, if he uses that scheme he used in Mississippi State, which, you know, from my vantage point, he used at Texas, it just didn't work. And I still don't know how that didn't work. But I just think that maybe he was rushing that situation a little too quickly. He jumped from Middle Tennessee to Mississippi State, and in 1 year he was at one of the biggest jobs in college football. And, you know, maybe he got a little too ahead of himself and jumped out there too soon, but he's still one of the great young defensive minds in football. And, you know, he should be able to really succeed and get back to that next level.
Was he able to capitalize on his Florida connections at Mississippi State recruiting-wise?
He was, you know, he got in there and started recruiting some guys, and we didn't really see a direct hit from that because he was only there for a year, and a lot of those guys they lost a connection with because Diaz left. But he's a guy that's going to get after it on the recruiting trail. He used some ties into Florida, you know, Miami. He's got some big ties there, and he likes those kids coming out of Miami. There's a lot of raw talent there, and he has an opportunity to get some ties into that area. And he's also got some ties, of course, now into Texas. And he was recruiting Texas prior to leaving Mississippi State. So he's got some ties there as well. And, you know, he still has those ties inside of Mississippi. He had a big-time linebacker, and C.J. Johnson committed to Mississippi State for quite some time. And once he left, C.J. was a U.S. Army All-American. C.J. jumped off the ship and headed to Ole Miss. So he's a guy that can build those relationships, and he can get some big names in there.
Robbie, we really appreciate you coming on the show with us this evening to give another perspective on Manny Diaz from the Mississippi State side of things. I look forward to talking to you in the future.
Absolutely, guys. I'll take it easy.
Robbie Falk from BulldogBlitz.com joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio, talking about Louisiana Tech's new defensive coordinator, Manny Diaz, from a Mississippi State perspective. Man, how those perspectives were different.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, the Mississippi State perspective from Robbie was a lot more positive than Jeff Ketchum's was. Although Ketchum, I think he was a little hurt about Mack Brown. Maybe
I don't know if he's necessarily hurt. He's just being honest that a lot of the situation of why we'll call it a dumpster fire, because that's what it was, a dumpster fire at Texas this year, was because of Mack Brown and not necessarily because of anybody else.
Sure, and his sacrificial lamb started 3 years ago. So, you know, I think he saw it. I think, you know, as far as Jeff Ketchum was concerned, he saw it coming. He saw it coming before Manny Diaz ever stepped foot on campus. And anyway, but like you said, with Robbie Falk, his opinion was a lot more positive, and a lot of the things that Falk said, I kind of share his mindset about, you know, Diaz maybe rushing a little bit to such a big job, such a premier job in the nation, having only the 5 years of experience.
Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we will talk about our opinions of this, what this means for Louisiana Tech going forward, and what kind of base defense he runs, what position groups he'll coach on the defense, and all that good stuff. Coming up right after the break.
Want to find out stuff about tech sports your neighbor doesn't know? Keep it right here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared King, staff writer, joining me here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Got a couple of sponsors before we'll get into more Manny Diaz talk.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 6 is brought to you by Lincoln Agency, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, Dowling Smokehouse, Chevy Land in Shreveport, and Maxwell's Market in Shreveport. Give us a call on the collegedeal.com hotline at 888-993-7762 or email your questions to radio at bleedtechblue.com.
Manny Diaz, Louisiana Tech's defensive coordinator, the hire made official today from a Louisiana Tech release. Spent several years at Middle Tennessee as defensive coordinator, was at NC State before that as special teams coordinator and position coaches. Then he went to Mississippi State after Middle Tennessee, then to Texas.
Correct.
Fired mid-year this year by Mack Brown as, in my opinion and in many other people's opinion, as the scapegoat to try to save his own job. Well, sorry, Mack. It didn't work.
Right. No, it didn't. I wouldn't even call it mid-year either. It was after the second game. So, yeah, pretty early. Got the reins cut pretty quick.
Brophy Football, it's a blog on Blogspot, is a blog that Jared found that really talks about Manny Diaz's X's and O's as a defensive coordinator to a T. I will tweet out this link, put it on BleedTechBlue.com in a message board for all to see. Put it on Facebook. If you like reading about X's and O's and want to know what he's going to do as a defensive coordinator, it explains it to a T. You may get confused some. I promise you'll get confused some.
Absolutely. Promise that you'll get confused some. But Brophy Football actually does put in some little pictures and some YouTube videos and stuff. They make it really easy to understand. All you really need to know about Manny Diaz's base defense is that it's a pattern match cover 3.
What does that mean?
Basically what it means, well, here's the deal. Basically what it means is they're going to line up in a cover 3, 3 deep, 4 under, and they're going to do the exact same thing that Nick Saban does, Jeremy Pruitt,
three deep, meaning you've got three defensive backs deep and four
correct
linebackers underneath, or that's what you're that,
right. It's a three deep, four under coverage. The same thing Nick Saban runs at Alabama. The same thing Jeremy Pruitt ran at Florida State, and will probably run as the new Georgia defensive coordinator.
It tells me exactly what Ketchum was saying, that it gives up the big play, but the three safeties or the three defensive backs that are deep are just making sure they don't give up a touchdown.
Yeah. Basically, what Brophy Football explains it as something that you can put 8 in the box on a running play from this defense. You can defend the under route, the underneath route, which is the weakness of the cover 3 with this defense. And at the same time, you won't give up a home run with this defense, although you can give up the middle of the field. Also, Manny Diaz likes to run what's called a fire zone blitz, where he'll either put them in a four three, a 3-4, or a 3-3, and crisscross linebackers, drop offensive linemen back into coverage, all kinds of stuff. Sometimes he'll bring both linebackers rushing off of an edge. A lot of different looks and exotic blitz packages with Manny Diaz, which is another thing that Jeff Ketchum said. You can't always blitz at that level of football. But when Manny Diaz was the defensive coordinator at Middle Tennessee State and even at Mississippi State, he blitzed, and it worked. So it'll be interesting to see.
And it worked in 2011.
Yeah, it absolutely worked in 2011. It worked in 2011 when he had players that could execute that defense.
And whenever Jeff talked about how it's necessary to have veteran linebackers. Well, Tech has veteran linebackers right now. They also have very athletic secondary players.
Yeah, which I think is going to be absolutely necessary to run this kind of defense. And Brophy Football tends to agree, which is kind of where I got that thought.
Because you look at corner, LeVander Liggins will be a senior. Adarius Barnes will be a junior. You return all your safeties. Then look at the defensive line. If he goes to a 3-3 at any point, you have to have big defensive linemen. Well, Tech's got big defensive linemen. If you're going to put an odd man front on the offensive line, you've got to take up bodies, or the offensive linemen are running in space at the second level and blocking the linebackers. This scheme could fit Tech's roster really well.
Yeah, I mean,
they're going to have to recruit linebackers going forward. They have one committed out of New Orleans in Quante Moore. Josh Ihambe visiting in a couple of weeks at a prime prep. He will be in love with this defense. He is a rush end / outside linebacker who gets after the quarterback. I have to think that Tech's new defensive scheme will be big time for Mr. Ihambe.
And you have to think that Manny Diaz coming in as the defensive coordinator and being able to help on the recruiting trail, a name that they know, a guy coming from a place like Texas, I think it does nothing but good for the recruiting side of the program.
Especially when Tech is looking to finish the 2014 class out with so many defensive players. And Howard Wilson DeSoto High School was committed to Louisiana Tech, visited Houston this past weekend and flipped to Houston. Well, all of a sudden, you've got a new defensive coordinator in town. I don't imagine that Howard's going to tell the coaching staff, don't come to my house anymore for in-home visits. Next week, if Manny Diaz shows up at his house in DeSoto and blows it out of the water, you very well may see Howard Wilson again as a Louisiana Tech commitment. Nothing's over until it's over in this business. But I agree wholeheartedly with you. Manny Diaz is going to make an impact in recruiting. When you have a coach as young as he is that has had success, he has connections in the state of Mississippi, the state of Texas, the state of Florida. Florida is a place that Tech has not recruited much for football. Now in Conference USA with two schools in the state of Florida, so if you're going to recruit a player from the state of Florida, their family will get to see them play eventually. It won't be every year because you won't be in the same division. But sometime in the 4 years they're playing, they'll get to go back to their home state and play, which is a big deal for a lot of players.
Yeah.
But more than anything, I think that this shows Skip Holtz has a great network of coaches.
Isn't this what the fans want? Is this not what you want? Do you not want – okay, there are people who are – of the mind that Skip Holtz isn't an X's and O's guy. Maybe he's not. I'm not going to make... I'm not making a call on it either way. But maybe he's not. If he's not, what he is a face. He's a face that people recognize. Why not surround yourself with great assistant coaches that can be X's and O's guys like Manny Diaz obviously is? Isn't that what you want?
One would think.
Right.
But you're using logic. And what? Fans is short for fanatic.
Right, right.
And sometimes they don't see things realistically.
Sure.
That's our job.
Sure.
To help shed light on those areas. And that's what we're doing here today. But whenever I was told that it was Manny Diaz, I promise you my jaw hit the floor.
Well, the first thing that I did was Google Manny Diaz to make sure that there wasn't another Manny Diaz that it actually was and not the one from Texas. That's the first thing I did.
So you're
being
thinking,
honest.
Is this real life?
I'm being honest, yeah. I was like, okay, it must be a different Manny Diaz, you know, but it's not.
And look, we imagine, and I have heard that Manny will likely coach linebacker, so Tech also lost Jeff Koons, which was the linebacker's coach, so... Obviously, that coach won't be hiring another linebackers coach. He'll be hiring a safeties coach because that's what Kim Dameron coached.
Right.
Ronnie Bradford is corners and special teams. So a safeties coach will need to be hired. There's going to be plenty. There's plenty of options. There's lots of guys out there that will want to work with Manny Diaz. It wouldn't surprise me if the person right now is a grad assistant. The person that he's going to hire probably knows right now who they are.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure with the programs that Diaz has been a part of, he has no loss of connections.
My guess is the person's could be a GA somewhere right now with connections to Texas and or Mississippi State and or
Middle Tennessee State.
Which is fine. If you look back, that was Jeff Coon's pedigree when he came to Louisiana Tech, and man, was that a home run. Jeff Coons, of course, is the new safeties coach at
Cincinnati
after being at Louisiana Tech for several years, doing great things on the recruiting trail and on the football field with the linebackers for Tech. But, you know, for the Tech defensive players, they've got to be excited as well. If you're a linebacker, you should be licking your chops. If you're a defensive end, you should be licking your chops. If you're a nickel or a strong safety, you should be licking your chops. Just look at Kenny Vaccaro.
Absolutely. Kenny Vaccaro actually, he spoke to the Times-Picayune after the BYU game. Well, actually, it was after Manny Diaz got fired, right after the BYU game. And he flat out said that he thought that Manny Diaz was a great coach and that it had everything to do with the players and little to do with the coaching and a lot to do with the option.
And what was funny is a couple of years ago in recruiting, Tech was going after Kenny Vaccaro's brother, who ended up ultimately signing with Texas,
right?
But man, I didn't even know who Kenny Vaccaro was at that point. Who would have thought that Kenny Vaccaro would be and who he is in the state of Louisiana? But when I would imagine we will see some Kenny Vaccaro sightings in Ruston in the off seasons.
Well, wouldn't that be something? I like Kenny Vaccaro. I like him as a player. I mean,
he's one of my favorite Saints players. Probably. Maybe of all time, and he's only played 1 year as a Saint. And I've been a Saints fan since I was a wee tot. So that's telling you something. He's just a very exciting player, and when you put exciting players and athletic players in a position to be successful like Diaz does, good things are going to happen. Now, if you don't have those safety valves over the top ready to stop the big play, bad things are
going to
happen.
Yeah, safety play is going to be key in the Diaz pattern match cover three. There's no doubt about it. But
and man coverage on the outside.
Right. But he had, you know, athleticism in the secondary at Texas in 2011 that had, you know, that had played. And that's one thing that Tech does have is they do have some, you know, some leadership in the secondary with LaVander Liggins. And I really think that Diaz's defense will do well with this group of players.
Let's take a break. Other side of the break, we'll talk a little bit of recruiting and then close out the show 7 and 7:15 segments with basketball. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7.
Don't have time to keep up with Louisiana Tech sports the way you'd like to? No worries. Just listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio every week.
Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7. Busy show.
Absolutely, but I like it. I like having stuff like this.
A little bit of recruiting talk going on in this segment. We won't tell you everything we know.
That's what BleedTakeBlue.com is for.
That's what it's for.
That's what it's for.
We got a War Room feature that came out Monday.
Updated today.
Been updated a lot today with lots of information. Make sure you check it out. We'll give you some of that here in this segment, but not all of it. Jared, a couple of sponsors, then we'll get into that talk.
Bleed Tape Blue Radio is brought to you by Lincoln Agency, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, Dowling Smokehouse, Chevy Land in Shreveport, and Maxwell's Market in the Shreveport. Get in on the conversation on the collegesteel.com hotline at 888-993-7762. Or, if you don't want to talk on the radio, email your questions to radio@bleedtechblue.com.
Lots of defensive players. Most of the commitments for Louisiana Tech that have not made their officials yet will be in this weekend. Guys like Jalen Ferguson, Quante Moore, Marcus Gaines, those kind of guys will be in this weekend. And the reason behind that from the staff's perspective is you get people who are already in the boat to start talking about how great it is in the boat. to try to convince other people to come in the boat.
Right, and one of those is Marlon Watts, who I spoke to earlier, and he was very, very charismatic. He is excited to come visit, but he's already committed. All he wants to do is try to get other guys to commit.
It's Marlon Watts, a 6'3", 170-pound receiver out of St. Aug in New Orleans. He was talking to Price Wilson earlier on Twitter. They both look to be very excited. Price Wilson, of course, a quarterback commitment out of Roswell, Georgia.
Well,
it is Roswell.
Marietta, Georgia.
It is Marietta.
Marietta, Georgia, Walden High School. I learned something about Price Wilson today. His mom, of course, is a Marshall grad. Price's grandfather, his mother's dad, is in the Marshall Thundering Herd Basketball Hall of Fame. I did not know that.
They're Marshall to the core.
Yeah, so they're excited about the Marshall game Saturday night, and Price, of course, is excited to be coming to visit. I will have an interview with Price later this week up on BleedTechBlue.com.
You know, I keep getting more and more excited about this class. When you look at how that they quote unquote could finish, it's scary how good this class could be.
It's all about how they could finish, but really I feel pretty confident about a lot of these guys that you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, there's some big fish like Donovan Wilson out there that all of a sudden, Donovan, he visited Utah this past weekend and went well out there, was once a Louisiana Tech commitment. He will officially visit Texas A&M this weekend. It's possible they'll offer. They haven't offered yet. They need a couple of commitments to drop or flip before Wilson will get a commitment or before Wilson will get an offer. Should that offer from A&M come, we all know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think you would be foolish not to take it.
And honestly, it's not a if he doesn't get the A&M offer, it's not completely done that he's coming to Louisiana Tech.
Sure.
Utah had a good visit with him. They've already come in this week to his house from Utah. They're showing how badly they want him. So the Donovan Wilson saga is not even nearly over. We'll know a whole lot more after this weekend. If I were to put a percentage on it right now, I'd say it's less than 50% that he comes to Louisiana Tech, just because the situation's just got pretty complicated for him.
With that being said, Cedric Cooper is not going to visit A&M. He will be coming to Ruston. He will be on an official visit. He's from Shaw, also a safety.
Has known the Jaluk and his family for quite a long time. Great relationship with Jabbar. I think the Tech's got a good shot at him. He will be here this weekend. Another long safety who is a hard hitter and would fit in well with Manny Diaz's scheme. Defensive line is a place that I think Tech could close really strong, and a guy that Cedric Johnson, who had some really big offers early on in the recruiting process, a three-star D-tackle out of Rowlett, Texas, a Dallas suburb.
He did have some big offers.
Baylor had some huge offers.
Baylor and Oklahoma State, also SMU, were in on him.
He made his top four as Louisiana Tech, Baylor, Oklahoma State, and SMU a couple of months ago. Baylor has filled up. Oklahoma State looks like they've filled up. SMU has filled up. Who else did he have offers from there, Jared?
Illinois, Kansas State, Tulsa, and Washington State.
So a good offer list there. And he's not just a low-level three-star. He's a 5.6, which is a step above the 5.5, which is the lowest three-star. 6'2", 285-pounder, good size. Another D-tackle out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area and Denton, and right in North Texas's backyard. JT Williams, he's probably a hair over 6 feet. I think he's listed as 6'2 there. I don't think that's right. A little over 6 feet tall, but when you're talking about a D tackle, that's the only thing that's really important is he's over 6 feet tall. Another 280 pounder. And those are two guys that I would expect Tech will get. and all of a sudden you've rebuilt your defensive line from guys that have left to graduation, like Justin Ellis, who has gotten lots of attention this week. In the East-West Shrine Game, he had an outstanding performance, and then he was invited to the Senior Bowl, which will happen here, I think, this weekend. Lost 9 pounds in 1 week.
Did you notice that? Yeah, I saw that. Lost 9 pounds in 1 week.
What was it, 354 to?
It was 354 to 346. That's you lost 9 pounds and you're still over three bills, very close to 3.5 bills. That's
it's called water weight.
It's a big man.
It really is.
He lost water weight, but that's still a big man.
And he's whenever you lose guys like Justin Ellis, Shaquille Lucas off your defensive interior of your defensive line, you've got to replace them. And Tech has some junior college players and some veterans. They have a good mix on a defensive line of freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors. So those two will be good additions should they commit. I think they will. There's a defensive end from the state of Louisiana coming in for a visit. Come check us out on bleedtechblue.com for that. That scoop. On the offensive side of the ball, there's not a whole lot of prospects for Tech to close with. We had Mike Dettillier on the show last week. He talked about Bailey Grenier. Bailey visited last weekend. It went really well. He is supposed to visit, I think, or he's visiting Vanderbilt this weekend. Hasn't heard from Vanderbilt, what's funny, since the new staff was hired. Hasn't heard from them.
So he flips.
He decommitted from him.
Right. He decommits, and they don't contact him.
No, he decommitted before the new staff was hired. He decommitted after James Franklin left.
Right, after Franklin left, and then the new staff hasn't contacted him. So that's interesting.
I think after this weekend to Vanderbilt, he may visit Southern Miss. He may visit LSU. He won't visit LSU if they don't offer, he told me. So Grenier, a 6'7", 320-pound offensive tackle from Southeast Louisiana.
Pair him with Shane Carpenter, 6'7", who I talked to today, has moved up to 300. He's 300 pounds now, and he's playing basketball. He said very little of it is fat. I would like to see a 300-pound man.
I saw him at the All-Star game, and he was 285, I think, then. So he's a good-looking specimen for an offensive lineman.
Those would be two huge guys on the offensive line, both six.
You look at the other also on offense, Cam McKnight. We've probably talked about him for the last 2 months.
It feels like we've talked about him a lot. It really does.
He will visit ULM this weekend. I think Tech's still in great position for Cam McKnight's services, but just – we're monitoring that situation. He picked up a Miami offer in the last couple of weeks, but Tech still, because Tech has his desired degree of equine science, unlike many of the other schools recruiting him, Southern Miss doesn't have an ag department, ULM doesn't have an ag department. That's tough for a kid who enjoys riding horses and likes the farm. He wants to be around that. So Tech's in a good position for him. Lots of other visitors coming in this weekend. Come check us out on bleedtechblue.com for that war room where we have all of those names. And we'll have more updated list as the week goes on, since it is only Tuesday. But they will have lots of kids, prospects at Saturday's game. Saturday's basketball game for the sellout, Operation Sellout against Marshall, which will be a good atmosphere for the basketball team. People ask me, Jerry, why Tech didn't have but only one prospect in last weekend.
Well, you've got Martin Luther King Jr. Day on Monday.
Where a lot of the current players went home for the long weekend.
Exactly, for the long weekend. You got a 3-day weekend. Of course, you're going to capitalize on that. And then also, there is no one and nothing to do on the campus on a 3-day weekend like that when you don't have a basketball game or, you know, it's not football season.
And the
season,
Lady Texas
no
were out of town and the Bulldogs were out of town.
Yeah, there was nothing. Why would you bring recruits to an empty campus with nothing to do. Bring them on the Marshall weekend, the sellout Mission Possible, Operation Sellout Mission Possible Marshall game on Saturday night. Bring them to that. Show them 6,500 people in the TAC.
Bailey Grainier's host this past weekend was Joseph Brunson of Ruston.
Of course he was from Ruston. He was the only one here.
So when you have an offensive lineman from Ruston, he's able to host a kid on a holiday weekend, and Joseph did a bang-up job in hosting Bailey. Tech has a good shot of landing the big fella from southeast Louisiana. Anytime you've got the last name Grainier, you know where you're from.
Yes, that's more like Melanson or one of those
Melanson
names. Yeah.
Or Broussard. Thibodeau.
Oh, Broussard's a good one.
All those.
I really like all of the BleedTechBlue.com teases that were in this segment. Visit BleedTechBlue.com. Find out about those stories.
Come check us out. Let's take this break. Other side of the break is basketball time, folks. Two more segments of the show, and we will talk all basketball just for you. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7.
Get ready for a healthy dose of Louisiana Tech sports. Bleed Tech Blue Radio is back.
Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared, a couple of sponsors.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 6 brought to you by Lincoln Agency, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, Dowling Smokehouse, Chevyland in Shreveport, and Maxwell's Market in Shreveport. Call us on the callshield.com hotline at 888-993-7762. Give us your thoughts on the Manny Diaz hire, on recruiting and everything else. Or email your questions to radio@bleedtechblue.com.
Well, Louisiana Tech dropped one at Southern Miss last weekend. 80-71 in a game that really they got dominated inside.
Yes, they did.
I was at the NIT game last year in Hattiesburg, and the game reminded me so much of that one. That team's hard to beat at home. It's a good atmosphere that they have.
They've lost 9 games at home since 2005. That's not very many.
That's a tough place to go in and win. Tech was dominated in the rebounding. Southern Miss finished with 51. Tech had 28.
See, that I feel like that was really one of the main stories of the game. Southern Miss only averaged 38 rebounds a game going into that, but they are the number one offensive rebounding team in Conference USA, and they showed it against the Bulldogs. That's unbelievable.
They had 29 defensive rebounds. Tech had 5 offensive rebounds on the day. Not good.
And, you know, Michael Kaiser doesn't have the best hands, and we know that. It's been well chronicled in his career, but there are nights when his hands are just even worse than normal.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with he gets shell-shocked when he's got big bruisers like Southern Miss has banging up on him, that it just gives him shell-shocked. It's really the best way to describe it. And, you know, Charlotte has players that are just like that, and they're longer.
Right.
6'9 and 6'11, right?
Right. Willie Clayton, 6'9 sophomore, weighs 240 pounds in a 6'9, averaging 9.2 rebounds per game, and he's shooting 64% from the field. So you know most of those are either dunks or layups or putbacks.
So Thursday night's game isn't going to be a cakewalk, because that is the kind of team Charlotte is. But to go back to Southern Miss, the player for Tech that I was most impressed with was Speedy Smith. When Tech needed a 3 to stop the bleeding,
he came up with it.
He was
twice.
There. 3 times.
3 times. Okay, well, for sure 2 that I saw.
He was 4 for 7 from behind the 3 for 4 behind the arc. 3 for 4.
You know, CJ actually wasn't bad from 3 either, especially in the beginning of the game. I was really impressed with what I saw from CJ in the first half, especially in the first 10 minutes.
Tech shot a higher percentage from the field, from the three-point line, only 7% less from the free-throw line. The story of the game was the points in the paint, and rebounding.
Well, and then also, and free throws as well. Southern Miss made twice as many free throws as Tech did.
Got to the line almost twice as many
Got to the line almost as twice as many times, and they shot 75% from free throw. So,
and it was not a well-officiated basketball game, but it wasn't a well-officiated basketball game for either side. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. We all thought that Tech was going to get an upgrade in officiating from the WAC to Conference USA, and dare I say it's worse.
I think the sample size is too small for me to say that it's worse, but it definitely hasn't been at the level that I was hoping or expecting.
That crew Saturday or Sunday, I don't think they knew what a 3-point line was. They were bad.
Well, see, I was listening to the game on the radio, and it was unbearable to listen to on the radio because it took so long. Every possession in the second half, every possession Southern Miss had, if it wasn't a basket, it was a free throw. And it was just on and on and on.
When Mike White gets a technical foul for yelling at the referees, you know, right. you know something's going on because if you watch him at a game, he is not a coach who rides the officials very hard. There was a no call. I believe it was on Chris Anderson. He was driving to the hole. There was no call, and then Southern Miss takes the ball up the floor, and there was a touch foul called, and that's really what sent Mike over the moon. Maybe it might have been CJ on Cordarius Johnson on a drive to the basket, but whatever the case. That's what sent Mike over the moon, and that's what got the technical foul. And he wasn't even yelling at the guy that called the technical on him.
Oh, really? It was another ref came in and he gave it.
Yeah.
Well, like Lanny Mixon said, Southern Miss wasn't necessarily the tallest team that we'll see, but
they're strong.
They were strong. They were very strong. They were wide bodies, as the guy on the radio kept saying, over and over and over. They were wide bodies, and it's true.
Alex Hamilton did his thing. He is Tech's scorer with Raheem Appleby out.
And it was kind of a frustrating performance for Alex, though. I mean, without the free throws, he really didn't have that great of a night, but he consistently got to the line over and over and over.
Which is part of his game.
Exactly. I have no problem with that. 4 of 13 from the field.
He was 0 for from the 3-point line. 0 for 6. Well, and he got some good looks.
But Tech didn't shoot very well against Tulane either. They didn't shoot very well against Tulane, and they carried right over to Southern Miss. They didn't shoot very well from 3 against Southern Miss either. They were 9 of 28 from 3. Southern Miss, of course, was 2 of 18, so they were even worse. But, you know, I think you have to learn from that game, and you have to move on. And Charlotte is going to have a couple of big guys. And
the good news was that Gilbert Talbot was back.
Right.
I don't think he was full speed against Southern Miss, but he was suited up and he played some. When you play teams like that, Gibby's got to be out there.
4 minutes, 2 fouls.
He doesn't put up with people's junk.
No, I was listening on the radio. At one point, Talbot and Boardingham are both on the floor, and a foul's been called on Talbot on someone else, and he and Boardingham are both laying on the floor. It's just, I mean, you know, he doesn't put up with it.
He's Boardingham. He was hooking his arm all night. And no call, of course.
Apparently, Boardingham and Craig both had some pretty good post moves. They talked a lot about a spin move and stuff like that.
Well, I think that was Craig that did have the best post move. Southern Miss is going to lose a ton off this year's team. They have 4 seniors in that starting rotation.
Well, that's what happens whenever you play JUCOs. When you get JUCOs year in
and
year out,
and that's what Donnie Tindall does.
And they're only there for 2 seasons. You're going to lose a lot of guys each and every year.
And he's got one that's sitting out this year that's a monster. He's 6'10". I think he's originally signed with OU. Oklahoma I don't know if he didn't make it academically at OU or what the story was, but he's sitting out this year. Will be available next year for the Golden Eagles. Southern Miss isn't going anywhere. I mean, this rivalry is not going anywhere.
No.
There, it was obvious in that building. There's no love lost between the teams or the fans.
And I heard that there were a pretty good turnout of Louisiana Tech fans.
Yeah, there really was. Their section of seats, I would say it was 70 to 80% full.
There you go. Nothing wrong with that. They travel better
for a
than
Sunday.
Yeah, they travel better than any team has traveled to the TAC so far this year, which isn't necessarily saying much. It's usually pretty easy to tell who that one fan is sitting over in that section. They're the only ones yelling whenever the Bulldogs shoot free throws.
It's
and
true.
There's two or three mothers there yelling during the free throws, and that's how you know where they are.
You know, and to get on, I haven't had a soapbox moment yet, so it's time for Jay Ford's soapbox.
It can't be Bleed Tech Blue Radio without a soapbox.
When you see what Southern Miss does with attendance, they had 5,100 in attendance to that game. Granted, it's a Sunday at noon. Even in Ruston, you're not going to have good attendance for a Sunday at noon tip off.
Well, 5,100 is not bad attendance.
No, it's not, and their building is not as big as Tech's.
Right,
so a few hundred seats less, but it puts in perspective how decent, I'm not going to say good, because Tech has some improvements to do in attendance, and it's not perfect, so I'm not going to say it's great or good. But when you compare it to their peers, to the population size of Hattiesburg Metro, for which is really what it is, it's like a 3 or 4 county area, I think I heard 250,000 people in that area.
That's a lot more than I...
250,000 people in the Hattiesburg Metro. So when you consider they had 5,000 of 250, and Tech has had... Let's use the ULL game for an example, and they didn't... It's not like ULL brought a million fans from Lafayette. There was 4,600 at that game, and you got 30,000 in Ruston city limits.
When you put it in perspective, that's not bad. That's not bad at all.
They've got some improvements to do in attendance. Football needs to improve. Basketball needs to improve. And winning cures all ills.
Right. The Southern Miss metro population is actually 150,000, but still proves your point.
I was off with 100,000. That's a big deal. That's a big deal, but yes, my point is proven. Let's take a break. Good call, John. After the break, we'll talk about a little bit more about Charlotte and then Marshall Operation Sellout game Saturday in the TAC. A couple of thousand tickets left. I think it's less than 2,000 tickets left. Make sure you go out to the TAC Saturday for that one. It will be exciting. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7.
You gotta love it. Tech sports, that is. That's why there's Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
I'm not sure there's ever a day that is not a wagon wheel day.
An Old Crow Medicine Show.
Oh, you don't talk about Darius Rucker.
Wagon wheel day.
Unless it's Darius Rucker singing Hootie and the Blowfish, I don't want to listen to Darius Rucker. I know you're right there with me, John. Hootie's good. Hootie's middle of the road.
He's better than Darius Rucker, which he's the same guy. And I didn't know that until not very long ago.
Well, Hootie and the Blowfish, you were probably four.
Yeah, I don't know.
Literally.
Probably so. Look, and what I'm saying is that I liked Hootie and the Blowfish music better than I liked Darius Rucker music.
Fair point.
All right, there you go.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Give us some sponsors, and then we'll get into some more basketball talk.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio is brought to you by Lincoln Agency, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, Dowling Smokehouse, Chevy Land in Shreveport, and Maxwell's Market in Shreveport. This is the last segment that you can give us a phone call is on the collegedeal.com hotline at 888-993-7762. Or, as always, you can email your questions to radio@bleedtechblue.com.
Well, our friends over at MasseyRatings.com, they should be a sponsor because I give them so many plugs. They were right on Tech Southern Miss. Tech lost it. It was not as close as they thought it would be. It probably should have been a little closer. I think the game was closer than the score indicated. 82% chance of victory over Charlotte. Charlotte's almost a top 100 team, which is good for RPI purposes. Tech's RPI actually went up losing to Southern Miss. That's what happens when you play quality opponents. You just can't lose too many games. So Tech's favored in this one Saturday. Thursday will be favored again Saturday. Marshall's not very good. So, folks, when you come out to that game, just expect a high-flying act. There will be lots of dunks, lots of alley-oops. Marshall's not very good. Especially after they kicked their center off the team. Or suspended him indefinitely. What was his name? We talked about that earlier. Anyway, when they suspended him for I think elbowing somebody in the face and too many technical fouls. But they have not been the same team since. They're 6-13 on the year. Charlotte is 12-5. But Tech's got some more challenges coming up when they go next Thursday to UTEP to play the Miners, another top 100 basketball team. Will not be an easy task. Anytime you go on the road in this conference, it's not going to be an easy game. They'll go to San Antonio for UTSA for next Saturday. That one won't be nearly as difficult as UTEP. They will host Tulsa on February 6th, the day after signing day. Then host North Texas that following Saturday. Then Rice, they'll have a Thursday off. We'll host their travel partner, Rice, in Ruston on February 15th. So,
Elijah Pittman was the senior forward that was kicked off of the Marshall basketball team indefinitely. And it's safe to assume that his career at Marshall is over. It was the second tee of the season. He actually got it while he was trash-talking the guy that fouled him while shooting his free throws, and he missed both.
Stay classy, Marshall.
Yeah.
Huntington, West Virginia.
The Charlotte 49ers are 12-5 on the season, 3-1 in conference play, led by junior guard, 6'4", 185 pounds, Pierria Henry, 12 points a game, second in the conference in assists with 6.3, second, of course, to
Speedy.
Right, Louisiana Tech's own Speedy Smith. Also, he's pretty scrappy for a guard, 5.3 rebounds per game, 2.4 steals. He's not shooting very well. He shoots the ball 16 times a game, and he's only shooting 39%. He shoots a lot to get his 12 points.
That's normal for scorers.
Sure.
But you should be averaging more than 12.
Right. If you're shooting 16 times and you're only getting 12 points, that's not very good. That means you're missing 10 shots a game. Also, Willie Clayton, sophomore, 6'9", 240. He's getting 9.2 rebounds a game, and he's shooting 64% from the field. As a team, Charlotte is the fifth highest scoring team in Conference USA, but also 12th in scoring defense. They give up only 2 points fewer than they score. 76 points a game they score, 74 they allow.
And Charlotte does have some marquee wins on their resume this year, beating Kansas State and Puerto Rico, along with Michigan and
right.
Puerto Rico. So this team's no slouch, but those two wins are a little deceiving. I think both of those teams had some missing players.
Right, they did. I believe the Michigan win was by 2 points. So I think it was 63-61. So not exactly as if they went out and handled Michigan. It was a close game. Still, you'd like to have a win against Michigan on your resume. Charlotte is also first in 3-point percentage in the conference, but they have shot the second fewest amount of threes. So you're not shooting very many. Make a few. Makes your percentage go up. Also, they're fourth in rebounding, getting 38 a game.
You know, to go on that 3-point stat.
Uh-huh.
You hear a lot of older Tech fans,
mature,
that are used to seeing the slower style of basketball. Well, that's not what Tech plays. If you're open from three and you make them consistently, Coach White doesn't care how much time's left on the shot clock. Let her fly.
Yeah, 34 seconds left on the shot clock. Shoot it.
And I really don't have any problem with that, because when you work the numbers, you can obviously shoot a lower percentage from three and score more points than you would shooting a higher percentage from two.
Because the baskets are worth
three.
More. Exactly.
So it's just something I think that those fans need to get used to. That style of basketball is probably here to stay, much like the spread offense for Tech in football. This will be the style of play that Tech plays more than likely going forward.
The Saturday night game is against the Thundering Herd from Marshall. They are 6-13 on the season, and five of those wins have come against FCS or lower opponents. Western Kentucky is actually their only, I don't want to say real win.
It's a good W.
But real win. And Western Kentucky is a future conference mate. Next year they'll be part of Conference USA. Marshall is 0-4 in conference play. And really, the only guy you had to worry about when you looked at the Thundering Herd starting five was Elijah Pittman.
He's gone.
And he's gone. He's gone. So that means that Kareem Canty, who is playing 36 minutes a game as a freshman, he's a 6'1" point guard. He's going to have to, I guess,
shoulder the load.
He's got to shoulder the load on as far as the point production goes. He's already scoring 16 a game to go along with 6.4 assists per game. Turns the ball over a lot. He's shooting 19 times a game. So another guy who likes to chuck it up. But as a team, Marshall is second to last in scoring defense in Conference USA. They're actually giving up more points than they score, 79-78.
So good games this week in Ruston for Louisiana Tech on the hardwood. Come check them out Thursday at 6.
Correct.
Against Charlotte, and then Saturday at 6. Right, or is it a doubleheader? It's not a doubleheader.
I don't believe it's a doubleheader. That's the mission, the Operation Sellout Mission Possible game for Louisiana Tech. Last time I checked,
it's at 7. Sorry. Okay. 6 o'clock Thursday, 7 o'clock on Saturday. Come check them out. Charlotte Thursday night, Marshall Saturday. That will, of course, be the Mission Possible sellout game. Come check out the Bulldogs then. Come check us out on BleedTechBlue.com for all the latest in Louisiana Tech recruiting news as signing day approaches. For Jared King, John Tabor, a.k.a. Joe Dirt, I am Jonathan Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. We'll see you next time.
Been listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio with Jonathan Ford, brought to you by Lincoln Agency. Listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on ESPN 97.7.